Hello and welcome to another episode of Medical Minds Mini. And it's one of those episodes where it's just me, as always. My name is Steve Osterhaus and Dr. Corinne Johnston, who is the Chief Patient Experience Officer with Guthrie and also a practicing family medicine physician. Dr. Johnston, hello. How are you?
Steve, I'm doing well. Those listeners who also view us might notice that my background has changed. So I have a new office. Which was a fun move. Still in the same building, but new office. So now you get to see a blue wall.
Excellent. I think what's most important is you, though. So that's okay.
Yeah.
If the wall changes.
It'll work. The microphone came with me.
Well, that's good. That's good. We have to have our nice fancy microphones. I mentioned it's a mini, and that's the episode where, you know, we reach out to different experts, but we don't always need another expert when we have you right here. So today we're talking about something that is still very important to us in these summer months, and that is heat. And depending on where you are in the country, sometimes hotter than others, but pretty much everyone experiences some stretches of pretty severe heat.
Yeah, we do. And I think we oftentimes underplay the way that that heat can affect our bodies and actually call it illness that may lead us to my office in your primary care office, or maybe the emergency room, and maybe even an admission to the hospital.
So talk about some of those illnesses that people can get if they maybe take, I don't want to say take it too lightly, but they're just not ready or prepared when they go out in this tough summer heat.
Yeah. And let's start back with how does our body, you know, we use the big fancy word thermoregulate, but how does our body manage heat? And you can probably think of some of those things that your body does, right? You sweat. So we sweat because that creates a liquid on the surface of our skin that gets evaporated and that cools the skin, right? The body also will shunt blood away out to the skin to cool. So those blood vessels will get wider. So then they can release heat off the skin. And all of that to try to keep our body in its normal core temperature. When we get what we would call severe hyperthermia, so our heat gets quite high, 105 degrees Fahrenheit or higher, then we talk about progression of severe hyperthermia, but also other heat illnesses that can occur. So really important to know some of the signs of that. That's what I'm going to go over today, and how we can prevent that from occurring. So it's kind of a spectrum of disease, the way that we look at it now. We have heat exhaustion, which is where the body can't keep up. So your temperature might be a little bit high, but really that's it. You might have some cramps, heat cramps, you know, you're getting Charlie horses, that kind of thing people will talk about, or maybe some, you're out exercising and some of your longer muscles are cramping up, your central muscles are cramping up. We have people that can pass out, you know, oftentimes exercising. They can't stand up or walk because they get so lightheaded or they pass out. And then you also can get to this, what we call heat stroke or exertional heat illness is the term that we give that now. And that's where things start to get pretty scary and that we want to try to avoid. So there's exertional heat illness. So you're exerting yourself. So these are the things you're going to see in otherwise healthy individuals, you know, who engage in heavy exercise during periods of high temperature and high humidity. So that high temperature makes it, you know, it's raising our core, and then high humidity makes it harder for that sweating to work. So these kind of people are your competitive athletes, your recreational athletes, military, firefighters, laborers that are outdoors doing things. It's among the leading cause of death in young athletes every year. So it's really, really important to know. And then obviously you risk if you're doing strenuous exercise in high temperature and humidity, if you lack that acclimatization process. So I was just saying, as you know, earlier we were chatting, my son is playing football and it's heat acclimation week. They'll do 2 hours in the heat every day doing varying levels of exercise to try to get their body used to that. And then also, you know, if you're not very fit, if you're obese, if you're dehydrated, those are really big risks for exertional heat stroke. And then there's non-exertional heat stroke. You know, you might think, well, Dr. Johnson, I'm not going out and running 10 miles when it's 105 degrees out. But this can occur in individuals with a predisposition. So maybe they have chronic medical conditions like diabetes or heart problems. That can make it harder for your body to regulate that temperature. Maybe you're in a very hot environment. You don't have access to hydration or cooling, air conditioning, you know, and there are risks in our everyday lives. Medications, having those chronic diseases. Some people can't sweat or they're on a medication, they don't sweat. Physical disabilities, extremes of age, recreational drug use, alcohol use, pregnancy, social isolation, all of these things can put you at risk for heat stroke. And really, again, something to take seriously. Patients who present to the hospital with non-exertional heat stroke have a high risk of dying, about 20 to 63% risk of death. So what does it look like? What might be a sign? You know, what takes us from kind of some of those other heat illnesses like heat exhaustion, heat cramps, is that you now have brain or central nervous system involvement. So headache, weakness, fatigue, nausea, dizziness, confusion, slurred speech. If you see someone, they might be really flushed. They might be irritable or agitated. They're not coordinated. It can even progress to seizures. If you're taking vital signs or you're looking, you know, basic ones you might do, their heart rate is up, they're breathing really fast, their blood pressure's low. Those are all signs that they need medical attention. So what can you do? Well, you get them out of that hot environment if you can, and that might mean taking them from the direct sun into the shade of a tree. You want to think about measures, so cool mist, a fan, immersing them in cool water if you can. Even tepid water is okay. Excess clothing, so get them cooled and then start taking off if they have extra clothing on. Icing, we always talk about the best places to ice are high blood flow areas. So the sides of the neck, the armpits, kind of the groin or hip area. And then how can I prevent it? How can I not do this or have this happen to me? Well, maintain a high level of fitness or be realistic about your capabilities. What can you do and what can't you do? And if you're starting a couch to 5K, don't start it in August when it's 95 degrees out. Do those acclimation activities, you know, get your body used to it. Take breaks. If you're out, you know, I would advise against choosing to do yard work on the most hot and humid days of the year. If for some reason you're forced into that, take breaks, hydrate yourself. You have to drink enough fluids. Don't wait until you're thirsty. You know, I always tell my patients as we age, the part of our brain that tells us that we're thirsty, it doesn't work like it used to. So have a hydration buddy. If someone's out there with you, stop and drink water or sports drinks. Don't drink soda. That's not going to help. Don't drink caffeine. That's not going to help. Cool clothing, right? Loose and lightweight clothing. Try not to being in a self car, or I'm sorry, in a hot car. And then self cooling. You know, what are things we can do if we're stuck in an apartment or a house and we don't have air conditioning and it's so hot? A fan is a good thing. You can spray yourself with cool water and then sit in front of the fan. That'll help some of that evaporation. You know, get out of the direct sunlight. Cool packs or cool cloths on your body are all ways that you can help your body maintain a temperature that will not progress to hurting you.
This is going to sound like a silly or a dumb question. So, yeah. But simply jumping in a pool after getting yourself all worked up, not really enough though, right? Because you need to be drinking fluids, right? I mean, I'm sure it'll help, but.
Yes. That's a great point, Steve. Yeah. The pool is going to help. The fluids are going to help the pool help even more because you're hydrated. Right. So both of those things make a big difference.
And you mentioned, kind of a two-part question or observation, I guess. So obviously it's really key. This is going to be posted, this episode, right around the time some school districts are either beginning or, as you mentioned, have already started the process with their fall sports and work up to that. So it's extremely valuable to take these things into consideration with these young kids who are getting into sports. And then just one-off, you know, I think – a personal story of myself, I remember being my larger group of family members all took a trip to Florida. This was probably about 10, 15 years ago. And as a competitive person, and I say I'm competitive, that doesn't mean I have the ability to be competitive. I just, in my head, I'm competitive. And I remember where we were staying had some tennis courts. So I was playing tennis with my brother-in-law, and we just, and it was so hot, so hot out. And neither of us were taking that into consideration. And that was the first time in my life where I ever started to feel dizzy and just kind of like, it just felt, my body just felt very weird, but I'm going to, safe to assume I didn't need any medical attention. I just needed to stop and get that hydration that you mentioned, but it was, it felt weird. It was kind of scary.
Yeah, I think that's one of those, it's a great point. You know, if you're out with a friend or a family member and they do pass out, right, and you think it's because they were overdoing tennis in the hot weather, you know, that really, get them to a shaded area, lay them on their back, elevate their feet, have them sip on some fluids, and really they should be better in 15 to 20 minutes. If they're not better in 15 to 20 minutes, if they're confused, they're not speaking correctly, then, you know, you would need to call 911. But so important, and so important to watch out for one another, because you can reach a point where you don't know what you don't know, you know, and then we're relying on others to help us.
All right. So just be safe and smart and know your own body.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Johnston. That was another episode of Medical Minds Mini. And if you'd like any additional health information or tips, just be sure to check out Guthrie.org/engage. We'll do it again next time.